Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Southern Fried Podcast, a production of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Rex Nelson, senior editor of the Democrat Gazette, and happy as always to bring back a regular guest. Hadn't been with us in a while, but we always get together after elections, and then we always get together for an end-of-the-year show, and it's almost gotten to the end of the year, and we're after elections, so tell you what we'll do, Skip Rutherford. We will talk politics today, and then we'll have you back in a couple of weeks. We'll do our end-of-the-year show.
That sounds great. That sounds great.
All right. Skip Rutherford, Dean Emeritus of the Clinton School of Public Service, Mr. Arkansas, as I call him, the original political animal, all of that to talk Arkansas politics. Well, we survived the election. It wasn't a year where we had a governor's race. None of our statewide constitutional officers, now that those are four-year terms, were up this year. And the amazing thing, and I think I'm going to start here just because so much money was spent, the amazing thing to me was this Amendment 2, in which you had two Oklahoma-based Native American tribes, the Cherokee and the Choctaw out of Oklahoma, going at each other on whether there would be a casino in Russellville or not. And they ended up spending tens of millions of dollars. And I guess those of us in the media should be happy. A lot of television advertising, a lot of radio advertising. And by golly, Skip, they were even doing full-page newspaper ads, which we don't see much of anymore.
Good for them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Giving us a good quarter at the newspaper for that. But voters were confused, and I can see why. I know there were voters who went in and voted yes on the amendment, thinking, yes, I'm voting for a casino to go forward in Pope County, not realizing yes on the amendment, which ended up passing, means there won't be a casino in Pope County.
Yeah, it was one of the most confusing elections I think I've ever seen. And number one, trying to explain it to somebody was difficult in its own right. And then listening to people's responses about their understanding of it, you thought to yourself, all right, have I got this right? Or am I missing this?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Rex, it costs just to get on the successful signature campaign, to get on the ballot, the average cost in 2024 was $3.25 million.
Wow.
Just to get on the ballot.
Yeah.
Now, what you've talked about, and you're right, there – millions spent in advertising.
It was unbelievable. Yeah.
But
it's
point,
what we would normally see in a very hotly contested U.S. Senate race.
Oh, yeah.
Instance.
I mean, it was unlike anything we've seen recently. But I think what it points out, two factors. Number one, how difficult it is to even get on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And then how expensive it can be to try to pass or defeat an issue.
Mm-hmm. There were other issues that we thought were going to be on the ballot that didn't make it. The fact that those didn't make it, and the fact that the ballot title that to me seemed most confusing did make it. Skip, do we need to go back and look at how we do amendments and acts on the ballot in this state?
You know, Rex, that's an interesting point because there are those that believe that the referendum process is people governing at its best.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And there are others who believe we're going to do everything in our power to keep referendums off the ballot. We're going to challenge them legally. We're going to challenge ballot titles. We're going to oppose them. We're going to get them tied up in the courts. I'm of the former. I think you ought to try to let people have a say and get on the ballot. But
I agree. I mean, I worked, as you well remember, in the governor's office where we went the initiated act process. We tried a special legislative session on how Arkansas would spend its tobacco settlement funds. Could not get it through the legislature, went to the people, got it on the ballot and passed it with more than 60% of the vote.
Yeah, and that's another example.
And that was a governor himself pushing.
Yeah, that's
exactly
right. The
Mike Huckabee administration.
That's right. We've also seen in Arkansas minimum wage approved. We've seen the original casinos approved. We have seen medical marijuana approved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes people have a populist streak in their initiated referendums or acts vote. For example, use this example. The state of Kentucky voted 65-35 for President Trump. It voted 65-35 against school vouchers.
Mm.
Three school vouchers were on ballot initiatives this election, and all three were defeated.
Mm-hmm.
So you another example, which is really interesting to me, Missouri, our neighboring state, who we're going to see a little action with, I think, this weekend. Missouri reelected Josh Hawley to the United States Senate, one
right.
of the more conservative, outspoken members.
Mm-hmm.
Missouri enshrined abortion rights in its constitution.
Interesting. Interesting.
So what we're seeing here is a populist streak among the people all across the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so is your thinking, had it made the ballot, we would have repealed the Learns Act in Arkansas?
I think that it would have been very, very close. I think it very well could have. And when you look at the trends, in like Kentucky, a 65-35 margin, that's big.
Mm-hmm.
What? Not to get into a long debate on the Learns Act, but it doesn't impact that many people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has enormous impact, but it doesn't impact that many people. Not enough to get a 65-35% victory for it. So, yeah, I think it could have been a really, really close contest, just like I think abortion rights could have been a close. Not that either one of them would have passed, but those who were pro-learns would have had to work very hard to defeat it.
Yeah, yeah. Back to the casino amendment, the way I basically explained this to people was that the voters of Arkansas voted to allow four full casinos, of course, at the existing Oaklawn racetrack, at the existing then Southland dog racetrack. They no longer have dog racing, just the casino, and then new ones from the ground up in Russellville and Pine Bluff. Through a very convoluted process that has involved multiple lawsuits, it appeared the winner in Russellville was finally going to be the Cherokee. The Choctaw wanted to protect business at their casino, which sits right on the state line at Fort Smith. In fact, the parking lot is in Arkansas, actually. It literally sits on the state line. They wanted to protect that, and so they put the amendment on the ballot, paid canvassers to go out and get signatures, put that on the amendment basically to prevent competition. So again, that's what we were looking at. Now they cast it, and politically, you know, I give them credit. They cast it, you know, this needs to be local control. But it really wasn't about local control, because the way it was written, it wasn't as if they're going to come back and have a vote now in Pope County. I mean, it's over. There's not going to be a casino there. And Pope County, interestingly enough, favored the casino. They were on the losing side of this when
county. When you look at the dynamics of the numbers, And you look at the number of people that I think were confused by the whole thing from the very beginning. What it basically said was that I think Arkansas, at least for the short term, Rex, is out of the casino business.
Yes, I agree. There won't be any expansions.
I don't think there will be any expansions.
Anytime soon. I agree.
Because in this amendment that passed, it's got you got to have a local vote. If you decided to do another amendment,
mm-hmm.
So in other words, if you decided to do one in Independence County or Clark County, they would have to vote for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, again, it's hard because when you do statewide initiatives, there are things that were like President Trump carried Arkansas overwhelmingly. Vice President Harris carried Pulaski County overwhelmingly. But President Trump's still the president. The fact that Vice President Harris carried Pulaski. So it got really convoluted as to what constitutes local control.
It really did. I go back, and this is a good lesson. You and I have talked about this, though. I go back to the original time we passed it. And it's one of those good lessons of let's not stereotype. And here it is. When that originally passed, if you had gone out to the people of Arkansas and said, look, of the two new locations, Russellville or Pine Bluff, one's going to go very smoothly, going to get up and running quickly. It's going to start producing tax money. It's going to be beloved by the local populace. It's going to be a home run. The other one's going to get tied up in the courts. They're going to fight each other. They're going to battle each other. Skip, I guarantee you more than 90% of Arkansans would say, oh, Pine Bluff is the place that's messed up.
You know,
that's where it's not going to go smoothly.
And it, the Pine Bluff story.
You know, I got a soft spot for Pine Bluff. Let's not stereotype, folks.
No, I agree. And I got a soft spot, too, because I think what Carlton Saffa and Saracen have done, it not only is great for Arkansas, but it's particularly great for Jefferson County and Pine Bluff in the tax revenue.
Yeah, over 900 jobs now, and there'll be another 300 in the new hotel.
And the new hotel, you and I have discussed.
It's massive. I was down there yesterday for lunch, Skip. It's just massive. Well,
and the great thing about that, Rex, is you're going to have conventions and people coming there to that hotel because there hadn't been a place in South Arkansas for them to have large groups to come.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really happy for Pine Bluff and Jefferson County that Saracen is doing so well.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on. Of course, many years ago, you were chairman of the Arkansas Democratic Party when it was the dominant party over those 2010, 2012, 2014 elections. Of course, we switched completely. Republican Party is now the dominant party. The Democratic Party is kind of where the Republican Party was when you and I were young in this state. And so you look at the legislative races, pretty much status quo, but at least the Democrats seemed a little more organized to me. They protected some seats that Republicans had targeted. They picked one up, got our first Hispanic legislator in the state. So given where they've had to come from the debris, I mean, my hat, frankly, is off to Chairman Grant Tenniel and the band that he has around him for at least protecting some seats in this last election.
I think you could say in an election where Trump actually improved his standing in Arkansas from 2016 and 2020 to 2024, Arkansas went redder. So it was, even though the numbers are small, they stopped the decline and they actually picked up a seat. And Northwest Arkansas is probably your next purple area of the state at some point.
Yeah.
But sometimes in a state where President Trump gets 64% of the vote, holding your own, even though small, and gaining a little, even though one, is a pretty remarkable accomplishment.
So looking ahead, and I was on a panel with Roby Brock on channels 4 and 16 on election night, and we were talking about this. Do you see some, to use the political term, purpling of the state, where it's not just so red everywhere that you start seeing some move back to some two-party competition? You know, I don't think it's immediate, but it's really interesting. The first place, frankly, Skip, I see that happening is in Northwest Arkansas because so many people are moving from out of state and bringing traditional, non-traditional political attitudes to Northwest Arkansas. And What an irony that would be in a state where we grew up, where the only Republican votes basically were in Northwest Arkansas, that that would be the first area to start going purple. But are you seeing kind of that same trend that I'm seeing up there?
Yes, I think if there is a long-term purple trend, I think it is in Northwest Arkansas because of not only the new people moving in, but an abundance of young people that are staying there and the progressive attitudes that they've got in terms of immigration and other things that are important to economic development growth in Northwest Arkansas. So, yeah, I see that. What we're seeing, Rex, is, you know, the Delta population is with, and I'm not talking about the upper Delta of Jonesboro and Paragould, but mm-hmm. the Delta population is declining.
Oh, absolutely. Especially Southeast Arkansas.
And it's just, so people are leaving, both blacks and whites mm-hmm. are leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's just not the opportunity there that I can say for growth. Now, one of the reasons that Arkansas is red, more red than even Mississippi, is the percentage of black population in Arkansas is much lower compared to other southern states.
Oh, absolutely. I was explaining this to somebody the other day, and I think that is where national political analysts really make a mistake, is they cast Arkansas with the Deep South. And I explained to people why Arkansas is hard to understand is we're not a Deep South state. We're this place in between. We're mostly Southern, but we're a tad Midwestern. We're a tad Southwestern. And you hit on it. Arkansas's black population is 15-16%. Mississippi is 38%. That's a huge difference. And so you can't compare Arkansas to Mississippi at all.
You can, and Mississippi has a black congressman, mm-hmm. you know, Benny Thompson.
Right.
And so, yeah, you're right. I mean, Arkansas, it is. I do think it's more Midwest than it is Southern, and some people disagree with that, and I know there's some Southern parts, but it's much more politically like Kansas and Oklahoma and Nebraska than it is Mississippi and Alabama.
All right, so while we're talking about legislative seats, we do have a regular session coming up. Let's talk about the legislature. Let's talk about our governor. Our governor, frankly, continues to make people mad. I mean, it's Franklin County now with not notifying anybody of that massive prison that's going to be built there. I'm not saying she's going to have a bad session, but what I am saying is I don't think legislators will be as compliant as they were 2 years ago when she was first in office in the legislative session, because when she called that special session, Skip, in 2023 and tried to gut the Arkansas Freedom of Information Act and legislators finally stood up to her, I think that sent a message to some of them that you know, those threats have come in and beaten us in the primaries are pretty hollow, that we can stand up and get away with it. That's my reading going into the session, that we'll see a few less, as I call that big group, the cowards, a few less members of the cowards group this time around.
Well, I think this legislative session, and it's going to be dominated, at least early on, it looks this way, that she wants to get more money for her Learns Act. I think that, again, I understand that's her high priority. I also think it encourages those that are looking strongly at a legislative referendum to take a look at it again.
Yeah, and I think more and more rural voters are going to see where this is happening is hurting their rural schools in that, you know, in most of rural Arkansas, there are no private schools anywhere close. You don't have any choice. So it's us folks who live in places like Little Rock who have the choice from the Learns Act. And I think there is going to be a rural backlash at some point.
And I think that's going to be an issue. I think it's another big issue is how you deal with Medicaid and work requirements and a different with the Trump administration. I think that's going to be an issue. But I think one of the issues that may affect us, and we have to deal with it depending on what happens, is that, you know, Arkansas has, I believe the last number I saw was 2.5% of its population were undocumented immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And their work largely is in agriculture and construction and hospitality, all of which are very important.
Huge. Agriculture is the leading sector of the Arkansas economy still.
And there are, the last number I saw, there were 4,000 DACA people in Arkansas, human beings who came here before as children before 2007. So there could be some mass disruptions going on in our state culturally and economically. But I want to raise one issue with you, which I know you care about and I deeply care about, and that is the budget doesn't offer much for higher education.
Mm-mm. And it is so short-sighted in that we are never going to get up those per capita income numbers significantly until we get up the number of college graduates. And you can bash on cost of colleges, whatever, all you want. But look at any study ever done, and that's just the simple fact. If you have a college degree as compared to a high school degree, on average, you're going to earn more than $1 million than you would otherwise over the course of your life.
Yeah, and look, there are plenty of people who don't have to go to college and can get good jobs. I'm not disputing that. But we're talking about building a major medical center in Northwest Arkansas. We're talking about opening a dental school in June of 2025 in Little Rock. We are talking about expansions at Children's Hospital and UAMS. We are talking about attracting major industry to this state. You've got to have a high quality educated workforce.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you can have two children.
Oh, absolutely. You've heard me say this, Skip. I hear this argument, well, no, we don't need that. We need more plumbers and welders. Well, we do need more plumbers and welders, but we also need more people with bachelor's degrees. We need more people with master's degrees. We need more PhDs, all of the above. Not either or, all of the above.
We need people who understand research and development. We need scientists. We need good doctors. We need good educators. So we can do both. We can do both. We can have a workforce development, and we should. But we should have also educated workforce development.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very, very short-sighted. All right, back to the elections again. I do want to talk about the Little Rock sales tax. You and I have discussed this at length off the air. it was a much better proposal, I felt, than had come the first time around. I felt that Mayor Scott had listened to some other members of the board and put some different things in there. There was, last time around, it was basically nothing for the fire department or the police department. This time there was. But yet, it didn't get much more vote than it did the last time around. What does that say about what people think about city government? What does it say about the people of Little Rock to you?
Well, first of all, let's. It's a good question, and it's worth a good discussion here. To start out with, there were economic headwinds.
Mm-hmm.
Kamala Harris faced them. Little Rock sales tax faced them. So 45% of the people who voted in the presidential race said they were worse off than they were 4 years
exactly.
ago.
Exactly.
So people were feeling very uneasy about their own economic position, particularly working class and younger people. And so that's a headwind. The second headwind is in the middle of that campaign, all of a sudden Summit Gas says, we're going to raise your gas bill, $15.83 a month. And somebody's saying, wait a minute, you want me to pay a penny and then you're going to raise my gas bill here? And people start saying, whoa, I've already got economic headwinds. Third thing, Rex, is that they didn't run poorly run campaign. Let's just be honest about it. You've been around campaigns. This is a poorly run campaign. They didn't start soon enough. Their message was, we went to the city board We got the city board approval in a 10-0 with one abstention.
Mm-hmm.
We put together a Christmas tree, and every director put an ornament on it, or at least had an ornament for their zone. And then they said, okay, people will vote for this. They didn't explain it enough. People didn't know what was in the package. If you have a press conference and talk about War Memorial or the port or sports arenas or whatever, it was a one-day hit, and you move on to the next subject. Mm-hmm. And people didn't have it. And then this campaign of, what was it, Restore the Rock, whatever that campaign thing, I can't even remember it. But I thought it was a yard sign. I thought it was a yard sale. I thought, that doesn't tell me what to do. You want to talk about a great sales catch campaign, look what they did in K-Mac Village where they passed a property, and the simple message was vote for.
Mm-hmm.
Little Rock's message was so convoluted that I think people just said, given the headwinds, I don't think it was a reflection on the mayor.
Yeah. And my sense is, Skip, if you were to have come with a smaller sales tax and said, this is exclusively to add land to the port, or this is exclusively to build those indoor and outdoor youth sports complexes, I think that would have passed. Something very simple with a clear budget. Here's how every dollar is going to be spent.
Well, and again, and I've been
that would have been the single ornament, not the whole Christmas tree. Well, obviously,
and
on the ballot.
And give the mayor credit. He went to the city board, got their approval, and they all wanted an ornament on the tree. So but look, we passed the late Buddy Belines put together a campaign that built an arena in North Little Rock and expanded the convention center mm-hmm. in Little Rock with a temporary tax. Oklahoma City's been doing this project after project.
What a great example!
And we did it. Buddy designed. Yeah. We could have come
kept
back
going like Oklahoma City. Yeah.
I mean, Buddy had it right.
Mm.
So if Little Rock, they made a mistake the first time getting rid of that 3/8 cents, which was the operational thing, which we needed. People wanted you to focus on pick up my garbage, fix my potholes, keep me safe.
Yeah.
I think Little Rock could come back at some point, just like you designed, and said, we're going to pick up your garbage, we're going to fix your potholes, and we're going to keep you safe, and we're going to do a temporary tax for what? Now, the reason why they didn't do that this time is the directors were split. So mm-hmm. everybody bought this thing. Oh, the directors are all for it. Well, yeah, they're all for it because it's got an ornament on the tree.
Yeah.
But not all the directors were for the port. Not all the directors were for the sports arena. So they got to decide. Oklahoma City put it together, and that's where the business leadership needs to step in and say, mm-hmm. this is what we need. This
yep.
is what
we're going to design one that actually will pass the next time.
And we're going to. Yeah. And the other factor I would say that the business leadership, say this respectfully, Rex, they need to fund campaigns for the betterment of the city.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to run them.
Yep. Good point.
They're not political consultants.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a bunch of people calling the shots in this campaign. I would go back. I would study the Oklahoma City. I'd study the Buddy Belines model of the river project, and I'd study the Oklahoma City model, and that's what I'd do next.
Yeah. Makes sense. And again, even though, and we will talk about this in the show in 2 weeks, but even though the economy is doing well, you hit on it. It is how people feel the economy is doing. And their perception was things are awful. And for some people it was because of inflation, which has started coming down, but they hadn't felt the effects of that yet. And Mayor Scott told me, I had one after another say it, that said to me, Mayor, we love you, but I can't afford this right now.
And I think that's right. I mean, I think you, again, someone said about the mayor, I said, let me tell you, if you really want to analyze this election, the election that the results that nobody really is talking about, that I've been talking about, was the massive win by Antoine Phillips in that city board. Mm-hmm. Antoine Phillips got 59% of the vote. His opponent got 29%.
Mm-hmm.
There was others. My point is, that's the Frank Scott base.
Yeah.
That's the Antoine Phillips proved to me that, and he carried boxes and, you know, far west Little Rock, or not carried, but ran respectably well there. So I think Frank Scott, the candidate, is different from Frank Scott, the issue. I think what we've got to figure out to do is how to make an issue palatable for the city. So if I were doing this, and I'm not, Rex, I would do what the Democratic Party is doing nationally, and they should. They're doing extensive research into what happened, why it happened, the role of the media in terms of how people are getting their news. Mm-hmm. I think the Little Rock leadership should do it a really in-depth poll and really do research after mm-hmm. the first of the year, maybe even after the legislative session, and take a look and say, what we did right, what we did wrong, what can we do? Because unlike Northwest Arkansas, we don't have the giant philanthropic support that lucky area of the state.
Right, right.
The things we've done, getting the Clinton Library, getting the Museum of Fine Arts, expanding.
Have to be public-private partnerships.
Robinson yeah. Auditorium. Those are all public-private partnerships. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to do it again.
Good point. Skip, I knew it'd go fast. We're out of time, but we're going to get you back. We're going to talk about Arkansas as a whole. But thanks for being here for the political edition.
Hey, listen, it was a great election. You win some, you lose some. You and I both experienced both the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
We've been there.
We have.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to another edition of the Southern Fried Podcast, a production of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette.